Once we've hit the record button.
Yep.
Okay, we're all going. So welcome to the Fuck Therapy Podcast. This episode is going to be incredible. We have got Emily and Abby with us. Emily has come over from Tasmania. Emily, how are you?
I'm good. It's a bit warm, but glad for it being a bit nicer today.
We have had a bit of a heat wave over here. Talking about heat wave, Abby has come over from a colder place.
Over from New Zealand and not loving the Melbourne heat at all. It's horrible.
It is definitely something that's hard to get away from. So where is this podcast going? What are we going to be bringing to you today? Well, we've got no fucking idea, and I think that's what's fantastic about it. Effectively, we've got three people here with a diverse range of experiences. We've all suffered traumas in the past. We've overcome traumas. We're dealing with things, got experiences in all parts of life, and we just want to have a bit of a chit-chat. Emily's over from Tasmania. We've all got together. Emily, Abby and I as a group for the first time. This is actually live. We're all in the same room. How awesome is that?
It is a little exciting.
That's amazing.
It's taken some planning and a few delays with lockdowns, but we've got there.
But the thing that's blowing my mind is 12 months ago, I barely knew either of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, literally 12 months ago, we were just starting, like, I was just getting to know you through video chats with the creepy cupboard, the cupboard above the stairs that I was sure a serial killer lived in. Like, I'd only just started working with Jamie, was doing the 30-day challenge, and then we're all sitting in this room together a year later being like...
It is definitely one of the great things about TikTok, how it's made the world so small, and here we are all living in three different areas of the world coming together and being able to share this time together, which is absolutely awesome. So to get things going, most people know a little bit about me. So Emily, just do a quick introduction. And when I say quick, just go for it.
Where do I start? Obviously, as you alluded to, life where things haven't always been roses and traumas that have brought me to, I guess, your TikTok initially and then working with you. Working through a few of those things and getting to a point where we're sitting here talking shit.
Love it. Love it. And Abby?
Fairly similar sort of storyline. Life not perfect, to say the least. Significant traumas and sort of half-assed worked through them over the years, but not really. Started Rise with Jamie, as I said, just over a year ago. And I'm now in a place where I'm not getting triggered. I'm not having the full-blown panic attacks that will last for like 3 weeks and I will just be a mess in the corner rocking other than when I'm turning up to work and being like, huh, I got my shit together just to come here. So I've recently moved to Melbourne, decided change was necessary, create shift and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And here we are in the room.
Love it. So it's one of those things, you know, both of you have, you know, definitely underplayed probably both sides of your life in the sense that you are both very, very courageous, resilient, powerful women that have gone through a lot and have had to put a significant investment, you know, of your thoughts, your time, your effort into creating shift into your life. And it's a journey.
Life is a journey.
It is a journey. It's not something where we press a button and things all of a sudden become roses. And that's one of the things, you know, I think it's an important message to say when you're on a healing journey, it's not so many people think that they've failed or they've gone backwards or whatever that may be. And quite often it's just absolutely not the case. It's just the journey. It's the process. You know, we go through the RISE program, we learn new skills and so forth, but that doesn't mean life doesn't throw us tests that we go, grah, yep, I was meant to apply that, didn't, okay, we're back, and we keep going. But that's part of the journey of recovery, and I think that's really important. You know, what's your take on that?
Well, no, and I guess in terms of work that I do as well, talking through things with people, no journey gets you just straight from point A to point B. There will always be ups and downs. There'll be bits where you feel like you take a step backwards. You might do a couple of loops and life throws something at you. but it's more about how you get back up and what you do to start moving forward again that's ultimately going to be the test of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things I love very early on, like it was one of our first sessions, not quite the discovery, but one of the first couple of sessions with Rise, you were like, yeah, it's not 5 steps forward, 3 steps back though.
Yeah.
It's just all part of the journey, and that sort of light bulb moment of, oh, I'm not going backwards, just meant that I wasn't like, I was doing those ups and downs. Yeah. And as I was coming on the down, I wasn't going as low because I wasn't going like, oh yeah, so you've just thrown away all that, you've got to start at day one. It was just like, okay, that's just part of what this is.
Yeah.
And that shift in mindset was just, it absolutely floored me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that lived rent-free in my head for weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's good that, you know, we're able to, you know, share some of this knowledge. But now you've gone through it, it's about sharing with other people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and empowering other people. So there's a whole host of topics we can talk about, because between the two of you, when it comes to traumatic pasts, I think you almost tick all boxes. I'm not sure if there's too
probably
many
do.
Yeah. that aren't ticked. So I look at it and go, I wouldn't mind delving into a few different things and just share our opinions on things like relationships, on, you know, growing up, on family, on narcissism, on sexual assault, on, you know, rape culture, on sexuality, on kink.
Yep.
All of these subjects are things that we've got experience in and knowledge in and that we've traveled through, and all of them are so relevant, you know, and so many cross over. And I think there's so many false stigmas out there, false understandings, and definitely false teachings.
Yep, 100%. So I think we need to just throw out sort of a catch-all trigger warning. This is going to go across all of those trigger warning aspects.
Yeah.
So take care of yourself. If we say something, you feel yourself getting triggered, hit pause, go do something you enjoy, connect with people, and then come back to us.
Or just fast forward a bit and we'll see where we're up to.
Exactly. Just take care of you. Do what you need to do to get through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Self-care is always first. The question that we always ask ourselves in any situation is the first line of all boundaries is, do I feel safe? So at any point in this time that you don't feel safe, deal with that first. So where do you want to start? Who's going to put their hand in the ring?
I don't know, but that broad topic range, how long are we here for?
Well, listen.
We can get Uber Eats for dinner.
Who knows? I have seen Joe Rogan's podcast, and they go for like 3.5 hours, and I'm not suggesting that we're going to do that.
Was that a challenge?
Zero excuses, Jamie. Zero excuses.
Yeah. And Joe, if you'll... No, he's not listening.
You wish.
I do wish. So it's one of those things, I look at it and go, you know, as we're growing up through life, I often talk about parenting, right? So let's go all the way back to the beginning, right? And I look at it and go, so many people have a thought in their mind of what parents look like. They have an expectation of what a parent will give them, what relationship they'll have with them, and what they actually are. And I've spoke about this before, and I look at it and I go, in order to teach young children how to do finger painting, right, and basic little activities like that, a kindergarten teacher, you have to go through primary school, you've got to go through high school, you've got to do a university degree. Then you've got to specialize in a field. Then you've got to go and do training, get mentored before you can get into an environment where you'll be supervised to teach kids how to finger paint. Now, in order to become a parent, there is only one thing you need to do. And the reality is, as we know, you don't even have to do it well.
There's a certain bit you have to do well, but ultimately, no.
Yeah, ultimately, it's like, you know... Don't have to be that.
A terrible experience can still result in being correct. A parent.
Correct. You don't. So that being the basis, it's like when we look at parents and we look at it from a child's perspective to the parent, you know, we have this expectation that they're going to have all the wisdom, the knowledge, the lessons, the experience, the expertise, the intellectual property, the answers, the solutions to everything that we as individuals are going to throw at them. And the reality is that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, so often when I'm talking with people that have suffered, there are issues that stem sometimes as far back as not far off birth.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of nodding.
Nodding really isn't useful on podcasts. Is-
We forgot the video setup. No, look, certainly there are many people who feel that they have a lot to give, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I often say parenting, eliminating and or just temporarily parking almost deliberately bad parenting, absent parenting, you know, irresponsible parenting, you also have best intentions gone wrong. My you best intention is to protect you, and I destroy you.
You don't know what you don't know. And unfortunately with parenting, what we give is what we've learnt.
Yep.
So we get that intergenerational challenges that come up because that's all we've known.
Mm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, or you're trying to change that cycle and you know you don't want to do ABC, so you try DEF, which isn't actually that far off from ABC.
And it makes a lot of sense.
Or you try XYZ and go to the opposite end of the spectrum and then you've got the opposite side of problems.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere that you can really go and be like, how do I be the perfect parent? Because what one person deems to be the perfect parent is going to be completely different for another.
Mm.
Absolutely. And the needs of everyone within that relationship are going to challenge what we do and how we do it. And then we add another child in and it's going to be completely rewritten again.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I look at my parents, not my parenting, but my parents where they were absolutely everything my brothers needed. You know, my brothers have a very solid sense of who our parents are and how they will always have their back. My experience, vastly different. You know, polar end. There's a big age gap between me and my brothers. For a lot of years, I say a lot of years, all of my life, I've always felt that I've been compared where I am right now to where my brothers are at right now. When there's 10 years difference, you know, well, why aren't you the same as your brothers who are 10 years older? They've got 10 years more experience, more knowledge. You know, well, clearly you're not that smart if you're not the same level as them. And so for me, that's been a big thing to overcome, is just that sense of an inequality of, but my brothers had like so much support, like clearly there's something wrong with me.
Mm.
And that's, even now that still comes up to a degree of, you know, at work, just starting a new job, I'm comparing myself to people that have been there 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And going, well, I'm not there, so clearly I'm shit at my job.
Yeah.
No, I've been there 6 weeks. I've only just finished training.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. A really difficult to, you know, when you've been raised in a family that has a level of dysfunction, a level of separation, it's very, very challenging. Then when you actually move into the relationship where you go, you know, a broken family, you know, that throws up other challenges to people. So it's really difficult times. And so many things that we experience. So if we've been in a toxic relationship as a child, as a teenager, that's typically our reference point to what we move into. If you have learned to submit your will, to shut up, to not meet expectation, and your self-worth is damaged as a child, that then moves into the relationship and really does open you up to a level of manipulation when moving into a more adult type relationship.
We set, yeah, definitely the standards are set as a child as to what is normal, what's defined as love.
Yeah.
And when we see that manipulation or abuse or submission to certain points is classed as love, then of course we're accepting that when we're older, because that's what we know and that's what's comfortable and what's not necessarily safe per se, but feels safe because of the experiences that we've had.
Yeah. Yeah, it's familiar.
Yeah.
It's familiar. And submission, you know, I mean, as we learn, you know, when you submit your will to the will of someone else, multiple things happen. One thing is you start losing identity. The second thing, you start losing trust for yourself. The third thing is you start losing respect for yourself. And the reality is it has a compounding effect, because the person that is then dominating you in that aspect of submission is then also losing respect. So the gap becomes larger, which then demonizes your value and completely, utterly destroys your self-worth as it grows, to the point where anyone that, if we start talking about and moving into a narcissistic type relationship, if anyone could see the faces that we're getting right now, right? You know, there's an element of grooming that comes from parenting.
100%.
And again, it can be with best intention. It also can come from really bad parenting. But regardless, the end result can be the same, you know. And once you've been groomed to submit, it's hard to change.
Yeah. I know for me it was... being in abusive relationships was still easier than A, admitting that I'd failed and walking away, and B, it was still easier than being, you know, moving back home to informal supports.
Yes.
It didn't matter what I went through in that relationship, it was still infinitely better than being at home with my parents.
Yeah. And I think that loss of reference point when you don't have a true north, in other words, what is a healthy relationship? When you move
in... Good question.
Right. You go and you move from something horrific to something less horrific but still horrific, it's still less horrific and therefore it is better.
Yeah. You know, I know for me the justification I made for it, or the reasons I gave myself for staying there, were, yeah, but I consented to this, so that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay because I do kind of want this, so...
I know what's going to happen here, here, and here, and that's okay, and it's definitely not over there, so I can choose this or I can choose that, and this is definitely the better choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think I know for me, I built up like this false sense of control of, oh, well, if I do this, this and this, then I'll be safe. And it's okay because, like, I'll just give over a little bit more of my self-worth. I'll just appease him, keep him happy. And then I'm not going to get the consequences.
Yeah.
Well, physical consequences, the emotional damage that did, I just separated from. You know, it was that's not happening.
Yeah.
That's next year's problem. That's next decade's problem.
Yeah.
And just went with, right now, my safety, do X, Y, Z, happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I guess that's the thing, is that we look at stuff and people view things from the outside in relation to viewing how we conduct our relationships, and they don't see signs of physical abuse and bruises, broken bones, all of those sort of things, and it's okay. So then you start to normalize and, I guess, or further normalize and buy into the it's okay because you don't have XYZ happening. And then we continue to, I guess, justify that as a society, and we come to the point of that women leave on an average 7 times, because by saying nothing and by accepting all of the other stuff that we kind of know is there but we don't want to acknowledge, we're actually condoning that behavior.
Yeah.
And then we're saying to people that you can't speak out, you shouldn't be speaking up, that he didn't hit you, he didn't do this. And because we haven't hit this theoretical bar of where it should be, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and the flip side of that, for me growing up, I did speak out about what was happening to me. I tried multiple times to reach out to the teachers, to the police, to anyone who would fucking listen, and no one did. Because, oh yeah, but you know, he coached rugby back in the 80s. Oh yeah, but he pays for underprivileged kids to go on school camps. Oh, but you're a white rich family. No, that doesn't happen here. Yeah. No, that's not happening in our community. We'd know if that was. And yeah, it just got to the point where it's like, well, fuck, no one's going to believe me. So why would I speak out? And as things got progressively worse, I learnt more and more that it was a file it in the back of my brain and a fuck it bucket and carry on.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't directly affecting me day in, day out. Like, it wasn't like something catastrophic had happened, such as a sexual assault. Perfectly normal in my world to go to work the next day, happy face, bounce around, right, we got this, you know, just completely in control. Never occurred to me that that would be something to fall apart over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, great, given my life circumstances, like, couldn't afford to be falling apart that often, but horrific to look back on and go, that was my freaking normal. Like, yeah, I thought that was acceptable and like everyone else's experience.
Yeah.
We're conditioned to believe that it's normal. And so therefore, because it's our normal, it must be other people's normal. And because nobody else sees these things that we've tried to flag as being horrific or challenging or even something that someone should raise an eyebrow over, well, you learn to accept it and go, okay, well, you know, it's that proverbial spare room where you throw the laundry and you close the door and you don't see it anymore, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, I reckon, you know, a significant point here is when talking to anyone that is sharing a story, first you have to take stock of what potentially they have gone through to get to that point of opening their mouth, because they may have been shut down time and time and time again. And to come forward and actually express an emotion, express a feeling, share something with you, your next line of questioning can be a make or break for that person.
Yeah. That next line of questioning can either be the reason that someone shuts down and goes, no, wasn't true, didn't happen, and never talks about it again until it gets to, like, catastrophic point. Or they go, okay, I feel valued, I feel believed, I feel supported. What's the next step I take in this process? Yeah. Okay, so we go to the police.
Yeah.
Knowing that someone has your back in that environment.
Yeah.
Or it can just be enough that they, I guess that first step of just being able to share too and confident that they can start to open up before taking things further, because taking things further can be bloody scary.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've heard it referred to as the injustice system when it comes to sexual assault.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's global.
Oh,
yeah.
It doesn't matter which country you're in. Sexual assault and police just don't mesh.
Which is really sad.
Oh, 100%. The police, you know, we should be able to go to our protective authorities, be believed, be supported, and not have our motives questioned. You know, it shouldn't be, oh, yeah, but what were you wearing? What did you drink?
Yeah, no, that's...
What did you say?
It's horrific.
Yeah.
It's horrific.
What did you do 6 months ago that might have given them the idea that it was going to be okay now?
Yeah. So I had it after my last sexual assault. I'd gone through the process of reporting to the police. Extremely triggering. It was a horrific time. And I then got referred to someone who was meant to be doing like this sort of deep dive into my story in order to help gather evidence. I'm not 100% sure. I was very triggered at the time, so my memories are a little disjointed. But I remember sending Jamie an email and going, hey, can we do a video chat, because I just need to talk about this. Today has not gone to plan. I was sitting at work trying to convince my guy to go make me cups of coffee so that, yeah, he was away from the window not listening. As I ran through every question that this guy asked was 100% everything we advocate. Do not ask a victim.
Yeah.
You know, are you sure you didn't consent? Are you sure you didn't encourage the behavior? Okay, you said you'd been drinking. Do you think that influenced what, you know, what were you wearing?
Yeah.
You know, those... It's
disgusting.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. You look at it and you go, none of them. You look at a line of questioning and you say, the line of questioning has to be, have some form of relevance. It's so ask relevant questions. None of those are relevant.
No.
Right? I mean, sure, did you give consent might be relevant.
But not, are you sure you didn't
give consent?
Correct. I've already stated...
Don't ask the question to sow the seed of doubt.
Yeah. You know, I'm already in a very vulnerable place. Mm. Please don't make that worse.
Yeah. But I mean, that the reality is that isn't even the time to be asking that question.
No.
That's a question that can come later.
Hmm. Yep.
Right? Without doubt. But it is that line of questioning. So whether it is domestic violence and domestic violence, and I don't want to underplay domestic violence at any level. It doesn't have to be at the most horrific thing for this to be relevant. You know, we might be talking about a sexual assault here, but it could be someone that's just stood over the top of you and pointing his finger in your face, right? That is domestic violence.
Yeah.
And equally sits in the same space. So it's one where I don't want to dilute any of that because it all sits in that space where it is utterly unacceptable.
If something makes you feel uncomfortable in your relationship, it's probably fucking abusive.
Yeah.
Relationships are designed to be supportive. And I know I sound like I'm talking about fucking unicorns and rainbows here, but they're loving, they're supportive. You feel good in those relationships.
100%.
And you feel good talking about those relationships to other people.
Yeah.
It's having, I guess, the safe space to raise things that are uncomfortable, but know that it's an uncomfortable conversation, not a conversation where you're going to be belittled and put down for having an opinion or a thought or a point of difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you look at the boundary management program that we run through, you know, the first line of defense is, do I feel safe? And if you don't feel safe, and now safety isn't all about physical or sexual. It's physical, it's emotional, it's intellectual, it's sexual, it's money and possessions, it's time, all of these things. If you don't feel safe to come forward and speak your truth, if you don't feel safe in any way, shape or form, in any sense of the word, that is the trigger right there, regardless of the level of severity. So at any level you don't feel safe, that has to be addressed first. And so many people go, okay, well, how do I address that, right? And there's a few different ways. But it needs to be addressed right in the initial part. Now, to some people listening to that, they go, that's all well and good, but that all bolted, right? And what I say, I always talk about speaking your truth. But the first question I ask is, am I safe? If you don't feel safe to speak your truth, then don't come forward and do that. Right? You need support. And we manage it through support because I think that is absolutely critical. I'm not sending people in to go and go, well, I'll speak my truth, but I'm going to cop a hiding over this. Or I may, or I will get yelled at, screamed at, and be triggered to the point where my anxiety goes through the roof. Right? Yeah. No, I'm not asking you to put yourself in that situation. What I am asking you to do is recognize that you are not safe and then to deal with that appropriately. If you don't feel safe, then you may need to talk to someone, and I advise you to talk to someone external to that situation and actually develop a strategy on how to get out of it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I don't want to leave. What if he's going to change? He, she, whatever it might be, right? What if they are going, right? And this is where we talk about the difference between hope and expectation. Right? Oh. Massive, massive point. So many people make decision based on hope and they call it expectation. The reality is, you're going, what if he changes? You go, okay, what has he done in the past to make you think that he or she is going to change in any way, shape or form? You know, well, his behavior's been terrible. He's low in character. He's got no emotional intelligence, little self-awareness, or his self-awareness is there. He knows what he's doing and he thrives off it. Either way, make a decision based on that information and not, yeah, but what if he becomes this avatar that I want of him?
Actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. So if you're not feeling safe, the advice is always to do something about it. If you don't feel physically safe and you are able to come forward and speak your truth, my advice is that a serious conversation needs to be had and behaviors need to change immediately. If you don't feel comfortable, recognize that that is your massive red flag saying, I have to get out of this relationship because I am not safe. Yeah. And I don't care if that's your husband, your wife, your child, your parent, your sister, your brother, your work colleague. It doesn't change based on who the person is. Your safety is absolutely paramount. But in order to manage boundaries, the number one thing that you need is self-worth. You need to love yourself. That is so critical. And there's a process in order to get there.
And it's a process that some days, like, I'm 100% there. You know, I know that I'm awesome. I know that, you know, I'm just brilliant. But then there are other days that it's like, today I'm really struggling with that. And today I am just okay. And that's all right.
And that's okay. It's perfectly okay.
I think we need to give ourselves the permission to have, again, it's about that journey of there's good days and you step forward. There's, like I would say, don't want to say bad days, proverbial bad days where you take backward steps. It's still part of that journey of learning. Okay, this worked really well. Cool. Let's keep doing that. This didn't work so well because my feelings were whatever they were as a result of it. Let's try and avoid that. Let's look at doing something different. This situation arose and this bit didn't work last time. Let's try it this way and step forward so that you find that point where you've got the ability to step back into things or situations, doing different things that make you feel comfortable so that you can continue to move forward.
Yeah. And it's one of the things I always say. I always talk about 100% responsibility because ultimately there is only one person that can manage your boundaries. Now, we've all been in a situation where we've spoke to a friend and given them the advice because we know what needs to be done and they're not seeing it. Stop laughing, you two. Right?
Yeah, and Jamie, we've told you time and time again.
Well, and I appreciate you picking me up on it. But it's those situations where we go, we recognize that. But when you're the person that's in it,
it's completely different. You know, I don't know how often I've heard someone challenge a thought process I've had with, yeah, what would you say if it was your friend, your sister, your, you know, important person.
It's irrelevant.
It's completely different.
And it's not. It's absolutely relevant because that is self. See, imagining boundaries, self-worth, intuition, and integrity. Integrity for you. In other words, you have to treat yourself the way you would your most loved personal possession in your life. If it's no good for them, it's no good for you. You can't go, oh, yeah, but no. No, that is you not taking 100% responsibility for you. Yeah. It's one of the things when you start taking 100% responsibility for you, you then pass 100% of anyone else's behavior onto them.
Yeah, and that's what I'm still going through the process with. Like, I'm by absolutely no means sitting here going, yeah, I'm completely healed.
Well, well, it's one of those things you look at it, you go, it's an interesting terminology, I'm completely healed. It's one of those things you go, life's a journey. It's not about being completely healed because we're all broken. We're all broken in all different ways and we're all navigating this world together. And some of us are in different places at different times and that's okay. But it's about having, you know, seeking clarity so you can see what is actually going on and recognizing that where true answers lie in relation to the navigation of your life all flows behind your relationship with you.
Yeah. And the thing is, even when we get to the end of, say, and being healed from a particular trauma experience, there'll be something else along the way that comes up. So we're never going to be 100% in that space because no matter what we do, there will be things that will come up that will be new experiences, new relationships, new challenges that will require us to reevaluate things and to, you know, re-examine, look at it, take a step back, look at that wider perspective. You know, I guess it comes to that one of the things that you and I've talked about quite a few times, Jamie. Sometimes we need to take a step back to be able to view things from a different perspective, but we look at an arrow. In order for an arrow to fly, it first must be drawn back.
Yep.
That is going to be my next tattoo, by the way. We're going.
Love it.
Nice.
So we see that taking a step backwards is, we look at it quite often as a negative because it's backwards, but it's not. It's that ability to look at things from a different perspective. It might be that stepping stone that we need to go, I was going that direction, I'm now going to go 2 degrees that direction and I'm going to fly that way.
Yeah.
And we leap forward, take in, you know, all of those experiences that we have had, all the knowledge, the wisdom that we've gained from that journey to then fly forward.
Yeah.
To find the next challenge to do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that type of thing where you go, you know, I always look at it and go, it's just the journey because life doesn't stop, you know. Mm. And we're just constantly gaining all the intellectual property. Whenever you have suffered in the past, when you can actually draw the lessons, the wisdom, the knowledge and the experience from it, it's like, no, we don't forget about it. Someone asked me the other day, it's like, you know, once I've detached from trauma, do I forget about it? It's like, no, detachment isn't the pill to loss of memory. It's like, no, the memory is there. It just doesn't have the potency that it once had because you've gained everything that life wanted to teach you. You've gained from it. And it doesn't matter how horrific it is. It's like, okay, that happened. It's horrible. It's disgusting. It's horrific. But it now sits in a time that no longer exists.
It's the ability to control the emotional reaction to it as opposed to being controlled by that reaction.
Absolutely. And the speed in which you bounce back.
Yep.
So it doesn't mean that you're not going to cop a knock. Doesn't mean that you're not going to get triggered by certain things. But when you do get triggered, instead of going from a trigger to, you know, horrific anxiety into to depression, to lose substantial amounts of time and energy, and no, it means it might give you a bump. You're going to find your feet, navigate it, use the tools you've learned and be able to move forward. And you become better and better. You know, I often talk about the implementation of gratitude to trauma. And if anyone hasn't heard that before or experienced that before, they're going, what are you talking about? How do you do that? And why do you do that?
And anyone that's done your list is swearing at you right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Stupid lists.
Stupid lists. I know.
I hate that they work.
You hear it come, it's just like, fuck off, Jamie. No.
But it's one of those things where you go, you know, it doesn't matter. You go and look at the most horrific thing you've ever experienced and go, okay, now look at it with the filter of gratitude. You know, I can't do that. Yeah, I understand. Now look at it through the filter of gratitude. Now, if you can't find anything, right, let's just assume worst case scenario, go, I can't see anything in that situation to be grateful for. You don't see anything that you can be grateful for. But that is a better focus than all the trauma you could have brought back into your life right there, at that moment. I would sooner go, I can't find anything, rather than go, I've found a lot of shit, because that shit is what's kept you where you are, brought you down, made you feel like you're destroyed and broken and stuff that you go, because it's horrific. So just the implementation of gratitude, you're going, if I'm just hunting that, right? And if we just lighten the tone for simplicity, you know, and look at it through, you know, the classic example, and psychology does this in study where they use the Lion King as the example, where that, whatever that ape monkey thing where he swings and hits Simba on the head and he's like, oh, it hurts, you know, and then he goes again and Simba ducks and he goes, yeah, but he's learnt from it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that scene, I think we all know that scene, and you're going, you see, if that's all you find, much better than finding the pain, the trauma, the sufferance, and focusing on that. And that's why we call this podcast Fuck Therapy, because we do things a little bit differently. You know, we focus on a different direction versus how did that make you feel? Well, how did that sexual assault make me feel? Serious? Well, I can tell you, but I'm going to get a really bad place, right? Versus challenging it in a different direction. What does that different direction do? It shifts perspective. But when you can start doing that and you learn that methodology, and then you go, oh, the first time I did it, I thought you were a madman. You know, then when I did it, I knew you were a madman and I fucking hated your guts. But then I actually did it And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, yep, okay, that's something different. And then you send me a list of 12 items and I send it back for more. And you go, and you send me back 25 and I send it back for more. And you end up coming up with 75 different items that is good and grateful out of bad situations. Your whole perspective shifts and you become better at it. So then when life throws you a quick little jab, not nothing necessarily life-shattering, but your mind starts going, okay, bang, and starts dealing with it differently. So you might just find a solution versus spending the next 3 weeks focusing on the problem. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what gratitude will do,
yep.
Right? Not only all the hormonal stuff it does to you and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, there's some of the things that you know, I think there's a lot of information what we've just gone through.
Mm-hmm. There is. I know for me, I still pull out the lists. Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily go 75 because I think that's a little crazy.
Well.
And especially for minor things, like I dropped my favourite absolutely. Cup. You know.
The 75 is about teaching the methodology, and we're doing the 75 on basically everything that you've gone through in life, right? So if you've gone through 20 things, we're only sort of picking under 4 items per thing versus when I like, and you remember where this list came from when I went bankrupt and I was in a point where, you know, I was having subconscious, not conscious, but subconscious suicidal thoughts. I did a list of 100 items on that one thing, which shifted my entire world. You know, and I haven't yet had someone that's actually gone through it that go, yeah, right, I wasn't expecting that. I actually thought you were mad, you know, and it is, even though you girls have gone through it, still challenging, you know, but see, that's the journey, isn't it? Although
then you get to the point where I sent you a list of 10 things the other day.
Yes, absolutely.
Random email. I hate you. Here's my list of 10.
Yeah. And one of the great things about working with Jamie is you can send him an email. All it says is fuck off.
I love it.
No context, no relevance of why I was thinking that in the moment. Just fuck off, Jamie. I feel better for having said that.
And I love it. I love it. It's fantastic. So to flip this around, we've talked about some of these hard subjects and so forth. What are some good subjects?
Sex!
Considering we're having a three-way right now. Three-way podcast. But hey.
Well, it's an incredible thing. So, what about sex?
Where do we want to start? There's such a range.
Well, I mean, the topic itself is as broad as everything else, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that, and I think this is a really good segue, because when you look at what we were talking about and to where we're going, you know, the number one thing I always talk about when it comes to sex is consent.
Mm-hmm.
Consent can only be given by you.
Yes.
And consent is not consent if it's been coerced, manipulated, blackmailed, or any other description like that that you come up with. Consent can only come from a place of absolute desire when it comes to sex. So it doesn't matter if you're a young teenage person potentially experiencing, you know, these things for the first time, or if you're into a more adult, serious type relationship where it's just part of what you're doing, whether it's a one-night stand, whether you're moving into the kink scene, whether you're married, all of it requires consent, enthusiastic consent. And if you have not given enthusiastic consent, then you have been sexually assaulted. So right now, I do want to come up with another trigger warning.
Okay.
And you did it well before. I'm handing over.
No. You do it, because I have no idea what we're actually trigger warning here.
Well, anything to do, if at any point you're getting triggered by any of this material, we're talking about consent. If you have been sexually assaulted in any way, shape or form, coerced, manipulated, whatever it might be, and you're finding this subject a little bit hard to deal with, then please perhaps pause it, come back to it another time. Please reach out to a friend. Have that discussion. Don't go through this alone. And perhaps come back to it. We will be sensitive as we go through,
But sensitivity is a spectrum.
Absolutely.
For me, having been through significant sexual assaults over the years, my sensitivity to it, I'm very desensitized.
Well, funny you should say that, because you were actually talking about being in one of your most triggered moments when you rang me. You know, you're working.
Oh, yeah.
I was at work. I was doing this. I was looking after the boys.
100%.
Then process this the day, and you're going, the day after you're...
Yeah.
Your thought process wasn't just in the... No, I had a responsibility. I went forward and did my responsibility. Then you went into the micro level of that, talking about what the guys that you look after needed. You made sure they were sorted out so you could then come and process something that would drop most people.
Yeah. But for me, that was just my normal.
Yeah.
You know, but because of that level of desensitivity to it, I may not be the most gentle with the subject, because rape isn't gentle. It's fucking brutal.
Yeah.
So at times I am going to be brutal, because that's just...
Absolutely. That's me. Well, it's real.
It's real.
It's real. And that's what the Fuck Therapy podcast is all about. It's about realism. So hence the trigger warning.
Yeah.
You know, so please be aware that we're going there. But without doubt, we've moved into this. We've talked about consent, right? Look at the giggle on the face. Kink is so misunderstood.
Not a sure understatement has come out of this podcast yet.
Right. Kink is so misunderstood. It's the misunderstanding of sub/dominant relationships and what is considered abuse in hiding versus what kink is. We were talking about it before, and we're going, sexual abuse is sexual abuse. Right, it doesn't matter whether it's sitting with two people sitting at the altar of the church versus an environment disguising itself as kink. Abuse is abuse. It doesn't matter what you're wearing.
No.
If you're wearing leather and studs, which is the stereotypical lot of bullshit, but you know what I'm understanding, right? And you are tied up and you're talking about all those kink type things. Abuse, anything without consent, anything that is stepping out of the bounds of what is organized, is abuse. I don't care where it sits. So when we move into this kink topic, we talk about it going, we're not talking about, you know, any level of intimacy or any level of sexual activity that's sitting in the space of assault. We're talking about consent. So
for me,
let's just assume I was vanilla. Now I'm not, just so everyone knows. Stop giggling.
Sorry, I can't get the words out because he's just so convinced he's not vanilla. And he's trying so hard to convince everybody else he's not vanilla. But he doesn't actually believe it himself. He's not really coming forward in his truth.
Come on, Emily. You know that's not true.
I'm with Abby here. I'm sorry.
I'm getting ganged up on. So I'm just going to play the part of someone vanilla. So, kink, explain it to me.
Well, I'm going to flip it back on you, because we've had several discussions around kink.
We have.
What was one of the biggest shifts in mindset you've had around kink?
For me, it's always I'm very heavily around and aware around protecting women from abuse. So without question, it was, is the woman doing these things that at that point in time when I had less understanding of what people were going through in the days when I perhaps was vanilla. but what it was going, you know, are these women being taken advantage of when they are vulnerable? That was a massive concern and fear of mine, particularly when typically I'm hearing the kink story after the trauma story.
Yeah.
So the correlation for me was very, very
there was disguised. A causal link there that you formed between the trauma and the kink, as opposed to being two separate subjects that happen to have commonalities.
Absolutely.
And for me, I can only imagine some of the atrocities that you've heard committed in the name of kink. You know, he was my dominant.
Yeah.
No, he was an abuser who got off on power and control.
Yeah.
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 So I think we also need to start with some basic terminology here.
Yes.
Because we've been throwing out vanilla, and that's very much a lifestyle term.
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about me and vanilla, I only can think you think someone that's experimental, you know, years of experience. So,
the sprinkles were removed, were they? Can we add them back in?
Really?
I really love the idea of vanilla being that baseline. So it's not a bad thing. I know there are like these misconceptions that I call you vanilla, that means I look down on you. It's like, no, vanilla is our baseline, and then we add our sprinkles, our chocolate sauce, yeah, our whipped cream. Going in a completely different direction here with my brain. Hold on.
Well, effectively, what you're saying, like, vanilla would be what would be stereotypically called a couple that is having what just, I don't know, normal, what other people would consider. So we're talking about, I don't know, for choice of better words, lovemaking type.
Typically, we're talking about that heterosexual, not even heterosexual. It's not even
heterosexual.
Just that baseline, yeah, I'm in love.
Lovemaking, I think, is probably the...
kind of like let's assume you walk into a very, very normal bedroom, close the doors, what is there is what you've got. That's kind of vanilla. Now, you can go and do a million different bloody positions and all that sort of stuff versus moving into anything. We're not having pre-discussions.
Yeah.
We're not talking about roles and responsibilities. We're not talking about limits. We're not talking about all those sorts of things. We're just going through the actions.
Doing the nasty.
Right?
Nasty? Who said it was nasty?
Not looking down on vanilla-ness, I promise, but...
You'll start somewhere before you add the spice.
Thanks.
Didn't say it had to be there long. Now, come on.
So we were talking before about negotiations and limits.
Yes.
So before we're jumping into bed with, or jumping into a closet or anywhere else that you might be doing your kink in a dungeon, you've got your discussion on limits. You know, what things will you do? What things won't you do? Are there things that you won't do under certain conditions but you would in others? And that can be a very hard conversation to have as you're coming into the lifestyle, because you're like, I don't know what I like.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know what I don't like. But it's so incredibly important to consider, are there situations that you wouldn't be okay doing these things?
Yeah.
You know, what circumstances would you be okay with doing them? And if the answer to that is never, that's your hard limit. That's not going to change. If there's, you know, well, I'd do that with this person under these circumstances, but I wouldn't do it with this person under these circumstances. It's what's classed as soft limit.
Yeah.
And anything you would like is considered your kink.
Absolutely. So it's, yeah. You know, I look at it and say, okay, if we bring this in, there's a couple of things I want to address in relation to this. One would be stigma, right? Are you a less respectful, less of a person, right, because you're interested in kink?
No.
Right? And I think that's important to know.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of like, you know, it's...
But I think we need to interrupt that one for a second, because kink is such a broad term. It is taking, I guess, the left of center or the left of vanilla term, and it can be a foot fetish can be a kink.
Yep.
But a lot of people are not going to be put off by that. I think where we're looking at some of the things of those stereotypes, we're sort of taking it more into that dominant submission space, into what a lot of people would deem to be more hardcore. And it's not that it is or it isn't in that space. It's just that for a lot of people, they don't understand where that's coming from.
Mm. And so one of the things I want to say is, if someone has a desire, and let's say that they haven't experienced this yet, right? They haven't experienced that side of sexuality, but it's something that's on their mind. They may even be secretly looking it up on porn and those sorts of things, getting a little bit excited by it. You know, do they need to feel bad?
No, absolutely
right?
not.
That's That's the point. It's like, no, that's you don't have to feel bad.
The other side of that, though, is a statement that I use very, very often with most people. Don't yuck my yum. Just because...
You've said that to me.
Frequently. My partner is very vanilla, but he's very good at don't yuck my yum. When yep. when we're in like a group discussion and someone will be going, oh, yeah, no, that thing, no. Oh, that's weird. He's like, no, don't yuck my yum.
Yeah.
Not for you. That's okay.
Yeah.
But we don't know who is into that, so we don't want them to feel excluded, which absolutely language that's come from me.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's a great little...
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
You know, just because something's not your flavour doesn't mean that it's weird or it's wrong or that it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
It's just a thing.
Yeah.
So long as there is consent and nobody's getting... Yeah, no, actually, I'm not even going to go with no one's getting hurt because... You know,
people enjoy.
Exactly. I think the safety side of things,
yeah,
has to be considered slightly differently to what we would consider in our vanilla relationships or yeah. our vanilla world relationships.
Yeah.
So within the kink scene, there's sort of three typical safety conversations or safety ideologies.
Yeah.
Which can be really interesting to see what people vibe with. It's so we've got like safe, sane, and consensual.
Yep.
So is what you're doing safe? Is what you're doing sane? Is what you're doing consensual?
So when you say sane, what would that mean?
That's where this becomes very interesting, those conversations around what do you consider sane?
But does that fall into sober?
It can for some people. There's so
because I know you've said in the past that you can't have certain discussions or do certain things under the influence
yeah.
of either drugs or alcohol.
But that's the same for any form of consent because correct. Consent can't be freely given if you are under the influence, particularly quite heavily, of alcohol or drugs.
Mm. Yeah.
For me, I will not do my negotiation under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
Yeah.
I will also not do my negotiation by text. So we're not going to be messaging back and forth to do negotiation. Or if we do, because sometimes it can be a great way of just filtering out, okay, yeah, you're not into the same stuff as me, you are into. I always take those that, you know, it's like, yeah, this has the potential to progress. I take them to a cafe or a restaurant that's fairly busy because I want to see them have that conversation with me in person. In an environment that they're not necessarily going to be 100% comfortable having that conversation in.
Yeah.
Because if you can't tell me exactly what you want to do to me or you want me to do to you, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
If you can't talk about something, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Life advice, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about for those that are a lot more introverted, they grapple with... verbal communication.
If they grapple with verbal communication, they're not someone I want to be playing with.
Yeah, love it.
You know, there love will be it. People that are happy to have those interactions. Like, there within the kink spectrum, there is somebody for everybody.
Which is perfect. So effectively, what you're saying is if we can't have a clear, precise, sober discussion where you are comfortable talking about it, I will not do it.
Yeah.
We will not even pursue this conversation any further.
Yeah.
You see, now that, and I think that's the message you need to get out there to people about what is kink.
Mm.
Like you look at the lengths that you're going to go, no, I might have a desire to do X, Y, and Z, but if your desire and comfort isn't to do X, Y, Z, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, push me out of my comfort zone. It's like, that's not how it works.
But the pushing beyond a comfort zone is very, very different than pushing beyond consent.
Yes.
Yeah. So but well, that comfort zone is a discussion already of like, here's my soft boundary, here's my hard boundary, here's some things in the middle that I'm not quite sure of, but this is what we're going to do when I get to the point I'm not comfortable.
And what is that?
Safe word.
Safe word.
Yep.
100%.
Yep.
It stops.
And should I be uncomfortable in any way, shape or form... feel like I'm letting you down
no.
if I safe word?
No.
No. And this is something that I grapple with. as a Brady submissive with masochistic tendencies and a people appeaser underlying attitude. For me, I have always felt like I failed if I safe worded.
Yep.
And it wasn't until I was in a scene, doing in a scene with a Dom. He hit a hard limit. I, you know, safe worded and immediately started apologizing. And it was absolute care and respect for, okay, we'll deal with this in a minute. What do you need right now?
Yep.
You know, do you need a blanket? Do you need meds? Do you need a drink of water? Like, can I get you something fizzy? Like, get your physical needs taken care of. Okay. Never apologize for safe wording.
Yeah.
You know, any dominant, submissive, you know, because safe words aren't just for subs.
No.
Doms should be using their safe words too. But anyone makes you feel anything negative towards a safe word. You know, oh, well, you shouldn't have used that, or you could have taken more. They're done. You're done with them.
Absolutely.
You walk away. Do not look back. That person is not someone that is safe for you to play with.
Yeah. And that, so you have a look at that level in the kink scene and you go, that is the same expectation in any sexual encounter. So for argument's sake, here you are in an environment where we've organized a scene and we may have even agreed at that point in time that, yeah, we're going to be doing these things, and you might just be at the beginning of those things, yet the safe words come out. Bang. And it's, no. How can we help? Versus you have a look at relationships outside of the kink where you might have been, you may have even had a desire for intimacy with a particular person, met up with them, all of a sudden not felt so good, want to kind of get out of the situation, all of a sudden you don't have a right. Yet in kink it's encouraged, and outside of kink it's frowned on.
Yep.
No. The reality is sexual abuse is sexual abuse.
Yep.
And that is the message that we're trying to get across here.
100%.
Right? Do not allow sexual abuse, whether it's outside of that, because kink is not sexual abuse.
No.
That is the message that we're trying to say. Sexual abuse, as I say, no matter what you're wearing, doesn't matter if you're spanking or not spanking, joking or not joking, no matter what it is, right?
So cute. You're
it's not cute. I'm going to tell you that was very, very masculine.
Sure.
Right. But the reality is, I've lost my track of train of thought. Abuse is abuse. So abuse is not kink. And that is really what we're saying. So the reality of the message is abuse. Kink is not a bad thing.
No.
Sexual exploration, sexual desire is something that should be encouraged, but it also needs to be communicated.
Yeah. I would strongly encourage anyone who's starting to get into the kink scene, starting to sort of start exploring, go to Munches, which are vanilla setting, so a cafe, a restaurant, a bar, depending on your age. And they're held by the kink community. And so it's run by kinksters for kinksters. You go along, t-shirt, shorts, whatever's appropriate for the venue, and you just meet up with like-minded kinksters. That is your kink community. They are generally really friendly, really open. You explain that you're a newbie. So I've had to do it coming into Melbourne.
Yeah.
I'm new to the lifestyle here. No one knows me. I'm technically not safe to play with because nobody knows where my experience lies. So by going to Munches, getting to know people, talking to people, engaging in those relationships, it's enabling me to be invited to parties. It's enabling me to be invited to dungeon events, where people can see that I do know what I'm talking about. I do know that I'm safe to play. I'm going to use my safe words. But it also means that when something's going wrong, you have a community to go back on.
Yeah.
The kink community will never out somebody. It doesn't matter how atrocious a person they are. You will never, ever, ever out someone as kinky to the vanilla community, but we will banish them from our community.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just that layer of safety of, hey.
As I say, I think that needs to be qualified, though, if we're looking at things that are going to the point of being illegal, that's a different space.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, we've got a little bit of a grey area here.
Just wrapping my head around that. So can you give me an example?
So if we, I guess, pushing boundaries or disrespecting consent can be one thing to a point, but then if we've got someone who is actively going against that, that's not going to be protected.
Oh, 100% no.
Yeah.
But that's going to be... It's not necessarily outing someone as kinky. We're not going to be going to the police and going, so he likes to do this with this and that. It's you're going into, you know, with that support person to support them to
when you're recognising someone is sexually abusive. Oh, absolutely.
But I guess in terms of someone who's not got an awareness, we're not looking at protecting
people
for the wrong thing. We're not going to be like, hey, by the way, XYZ is there. Their kink or their interest, it's going to be that side will be left alone. However, the lack of consent, the assaults are not going to be protected.
Absolutely not, you know. And I think that's something that the kink world does almost better than the vanilla world is they will take consent violations way more seriously. You know, it's not, oh, we'll prove that he violated your consent, prove that she violated your consent. It's simply, hey, this happened with so-and-so. I don't know how I feel about it right now. And it's an immediate group response of, okay, what do you need? Okay, we're getting them removed right now. What do you need? How can we support you? There's no, oh, yeah, but, you know, I saw you have a drink earlier. Are you sure?
Your dress was a bit shorter than last week.
Yeah, you know, you have been walking around naked all night flirting with everyone.
Yeah.
So what? So with everybody else.
Well, what I actually think's interesting in relation to what is real kink is it starts with communication and consent. That doesn't happen outside of the kink community.
No.
As a rule.
As a rule. Yeah.
As a rule. As a rule, the outside of kink community starts with assumption or worse.
Yeah.
Presumption.
Yeah. You know, well, we're going for dinner. I'm paying $100. But my own tongue. I'm paying $100 for dinner. You're going to sleep with me.
Correct. Correct. I was talking to a 16-year-old girl and she was saying to me, I was talking to her about relationships and I was talking to her about dating and she was like, ugh. And I'm like, well, hang on, I missed something. You know? And when we dug into it, effectively, dating meant that I've got to now commit to sleeping to that person. I'm like, what the fuck has happened to dating?
Yep.
Right? 16-year-old girl, and that her group, as far as they're concerned, is there's a high expectation of. So her level of being repulsed by it was to avoid that level of expectation and pressure to go, well, what if I don't like this dude?
Yeah.
And you're going, that is horrific. But that's what is out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And I go, you know, and as much as you dry reach every time I talk about this subject, but I'm going, dating is to get to know.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. However, we're now in a phase of hookup culture.
Yes.
Where everything is, you know, bang, bang, bang. Organized by text, meet up for a drink, maybe to check vibe, bang, sleep with them.
You know, and I look at it and go,
if you're going to it, there's a space for everything, and that includes that space. And if you're going into that knowing that's what you're going into with both parties, going, okay, we're after a physical outcome. We're going to see if there's a vibe. Yeah, if there is, cool. But if you're not going into, if you're looking for a relationship, then yeah, we need to redefine, or probably redefine
I think we've got to go back old school a little bit.
Yeah, winding back the clock to dating, being, getting to know someone, and no expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things I say to people that I work with is you set the rules. Eliminate the thought process of what the other person wants, thinks they want, expects, or whatever they might call it, and eliminate the whole lot of it. Throw it in the bin. You set the rules because consent comes from you. You don't need permission from anyone else. You don't need to feel guilty about that. You don't need permission for that because it's all about you. The number one requirement is you, in your mind, have it completely and utterly off the table. If you're looking to get to know.
Yeah.
Right? And if you so choose to put it on the table, so be it. But it's coming from you, from a desire, from being enthusiastic. Now, that's consent.
Yeah.
Right? And that can happen within 30 seconds if that's what you choose.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not it's the message that I try and get to people. It's like completely eliminate it from the thought process. You go, but it's there. It's like, no, it's there if you put it there. Yeah, but they have it. It's like, I don't care. That's their side of it. If they behave in any way, shape, or form that is contrary to you and your comfort levels, there's your red flag. Pick it on date one.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the same token, just because we put something on the table and go, okay, these are the plethora of options, doesn't mean we have to pick it up.
Nope.
We don't have to play with it.
Nope.
Unless you want to.
Absolutely.
Unless you want to.
Mind blown. Something's on the table. I'm going to pick it up and play with it.
Different negotiation place there.
100%. 100%. But
all about context.
But again, and that's the point.
Mm.
That's okay if you so choose to see something and go, I'll have a crack at that. Then that's your thing. It's always the one when you go, but I don't. It's when that person is going, no, I'm now scared, I'm now fearful, or I'm uncomfortable, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's to enable them to be able to comfortably, without guilt, remove themselves from that situation.
Absolutely.
Safely.
If you're not comfortable, you're not safe.
Yeah.
Do whatever it takes to be safe.
Yeah.
And get the fuck out.
Yeah.
100% get the fuck out.
Yeah, and that's any situation. So I think now we are well over an hour. So I think that is awesome for this particular episode of the Fuck Therapy Podcast. So we have gone through quite a few subjects. So thank you both, Emily and Abby, for sharing your thoughts, your ideas, your experiences, your wisdoms, your humour. You know, not so thank you for your definition of vanilla for Shelley and I. We are just guns, aren't we, babe? Yep.
You're feeling a bit cold out there, Jamie. I mean, honestly, if the shoe fits, wear it. Come forward in your truth.
Well, that is awesome. Now, you know how we're going to end this?
No idea.
Come on.
Really?
Yeah, you both know. You both bloody know.
Stay strong.
Yeehaw!